1027 Business with Michael Avery.
Well, as a nation, South Africa has always had relatively low savings rates. We're not a nation of very good savers, and there are many reasons behind that. A lot of it has to do with wage inequality. A lot of it has to do just with a cultural propensity to want to keep up with the Joneses. Now, the national savings rate is really, it's the GDP that's saved rather than spent in an economy, and it's calculated as a difference between a nation's income and its consumption divided by income. Now, the national savings rate is important because it's an indicator of a nation's financial health, as it shows trends in savings, and those then lead to investments which stimulate growth, and that's really what we need in this economy. Today, the Old Mutual released its annual savings and investment monitor, which always provides a useful dipstick into where we are. John Manyike is head of financial education at Old Mutual. John, welcome. Let's start with confidence in the South African economy. Still not yet at pre-pandemic levels, I see.
No, absolutely. I mean, we're seeing personal earnings improving. The number of people who reported that they were earning less than what they were earning before COVID seemed to have improved quite significantly, I must add, from 53% last year to 34% this year. I mean, that's a good sign. And we're also hearing people say they are more optimistic about their financial outlook, which is also quite positive. So clearly, the resilience of South Africans is paying dividends, because there's a correlation between people's confidence in their financial outlook as well as their ability to manage their finances to their ability to save. There's definitely a direct correlation there from the numbers we're seeing.
And you measure things like financial satisfaction, and similarly you track financial stress levels. What does it reveal there? How firstly do you find financial satisfaction? What does that mean? That someone's just confident that they're going to retire with enough? What do you measure with the financial satisfaction?
So what we generally ask people, we try and look at the mean score. So we'll ask people, you know, from a scale of 1 to 10, how satisfied are you with your current financial position? You know, year in year, and we're seeing that improving. So whatever makes people become more optimistic and positive, it's good. But we do know that financial education does go a long way in improving people's confidence in their ability to manage their finance. So even if they're not necessarily there, but the fact that they're optimistic and they believe that they can manage their finances, when we look at the number of people who are satisfied with their current positions, who are optimistic about the future, and, you know, displaying that level of confidence, we see that they are more likely to save compared to those who don't have confidence and who are not happy about their current financial position.
And that's an important distinction, because often it can just be a confidence issue that determines or dictates whether or not someone will actually put away some form of savings every month, versus someone who's not confident and might just say, well, I don't have enough to save. But really, it's a behavioral economics issue that underlies that propensity not to save. When you look at the emergency buffers that South Africans have, well, everyone really needs to get through a crisis like COVID. I'm sure a lot of those were depleted during the pandemic. Are South Africans managing to replenish their financial reserves and their buffers after COVID?
We found it quite interesting that, again, there's another, this is another area of improvement where we're seeing 39% of working South Africans saying that if they lost their job, they've got enough reserves to last them for at least 3 months. And that is up from 36%, which we saw in 2021, as well as 27% in 2020. So certainly it's moving in the right direction. So it means, putting a buffer is actually top of mind for many people. I think because people realize that a financial shock is a reality and will come from time to time, especially amongst people who are, you know, are freelancers, because they know that they don't have a fixed income. But we are seeing people making sure that they put enough reserves to last them longer, and that's a positive.
That's a huge positive there, and a great way to start building your financial plan is always to have that buffer, have the reserves in place, just in case you don't want to be dipping into that expensive credit card debt to get you through those periods. And then when it comes to investing, what are the perceptions around the appetite for investing in what are perceived to be riskier investments, equities and offshore investments in cryptocurrencies?
Yeah, this is quite interesting, because we're seeing a risk inclined a behavior where people are more prepared to take more risks going into cryptocurrencies. But we're also seeing people also resorting to gambling, online gambling in particular. I think we saw a number of about 44% of people now relying on gambling as another stream of income. And of course, the concern that we need to have there is the fact that, you know, anything can happen with gambling. You can lose your valuable assets. And also, if you've got access to credit, you might have people starting to use the credit card or making a loan in order to gamble. And that could also be quite dangerous and not good for economy should it go that route. So that would be definitely a cause for concern that we need to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. And it's like kiting when, you know, individuals are using one credit card to pay off another credit card because of that poor financial behavior, you know, buying all of your groceries, for example, on the credit card every month. That's not to say that traditional savings vehicles are necessarily out of favor, is it? What do South Africans think of the traditional sort of savings and stock fells and that kind of thing?
Yeah, we also saw, again, an upward swing in the number of employed Black South Africans who have stock fells. You know, 63% of them saying they belong to more than one stock fell. So look, the popularity of stock fells clearly is positive and points to a culture of saving. I think one may argue, especially when it's estimated that there's over close to 50 billion rand, you know, floating in the informal sector. I think the most important thing is that where that money is kept. You know, because if the money is not in the bank, then unfortunately that money is not growing. So, and it's important that we encourage stock firms to partner with the financial sector to leverage formal instruments which actually offer the benefit of compound interest. I do know a couple of stock firms who invest in unit trust. Others would even go to an extent of buying property and they pay it off over time. And of course, then they, once it's paid off, I mean, they start making a good profit from it. I mean, there's different ways of ensuring that the money is actually growing, and that's important. I think the most unfortunate thing is this money is not, you know, in the formal system. And for example, we know that majority of them know that they actually borrow from their own stock funds and they pay in interest of up to 50%, which is quite high. I think it could also be a reason of people trying to shy away from borrowing from the normal formal lenders and banks, because maybe the credit scoring criteria not being able to qualify. So there may be different reasons why people are going the stock fell route and having more than one stock fell.
But there's definitely an opportunity, and I know of a few fintechs who are trying to kind of bank the unbanked and sort out the base of the pyramid for whatever reason. And you've mentioned a few, potentially it's not able to sufficiently credit score these individuals, but they've used different techniques and big data and that kind of thing to be able to bridge the gap. But I've also heard of stock fells just taking their money and sticking it with the wholesaler and then going and picking up groceries 12 months later at a very small discount. You know, that money sits with the wholesaler and they go out and they invest and earn whatever they earn with that money during the 12 months. So there's a lot that still could be done to help educate that community. And I think education comes through quite strongly in the Savings and Investment Monitor that Old Mutual produces, that we really need to do a much better job across the board, even though we are seeing some improvements in terms of educating and empowering most South African consumers to be better savers and investors.
Absolutely. I think as we always say, when you know better, you do better. You know, and I like the point you made about, you know, that money sitting perhaps maybe with retailers. They have access to that money. They can invest. They can grow that money. And, you know, those who are members of a stock fund who actually use that money to actually buy groceries at the end of the year, then you've got another problem because you've bought things in bulk. And some of those things have an expiry date. And that's a challenge there. I mean, the question is whether there's really value there. So, but financial education will address most of those things to the extent that will reduce the ignorance that is amongst the people so that they make prudent financial decisions.
And we know that globally there's the phenomenon of the great resignation because of COVID and people being locked down and realizing that there's a lot more to life than working in a job that you don't like. But, you know, the context in South Africa is we still have the world's highest unemployment rate. How are you viewing attitudes towards work in this current environment?
It was quite also interesting to see that, you know, one in four of people that we surveyed actually resigned, and nearly half of them actually resigned not because of the money issue, but because they wanted to rebrand themselves, to develop new skills, start a new career, and actually follow their dreams. I guess one can argue that it's okay, but the most important thing there is that even when they resign, how much of their retirement fund, if they belong to one, have they preserved? You know, because if all that money is withdrawn and it's not reinvested in any shape or form, then again there's an erosion of value, and then it's simply going to increase the dependence on the state in terms of social grants and so on. So that's why it's important that we look at that. And you know, I just hope also the people who resign in order to develop new skills is that they actually also make sound financial decisions.
And are savers, investors, consumers generally aware of things like the proposed pension reform that Treasury's got out and the two-pot system allowing certain access to retirement funds before one retires? Is there an awareness generally of that?
I think there's very little awareness or understanding of what that means. And I think, again, it goes back to the issue of the backlog of financial education that we have. It's very important for people to understand what their retirement replacement ratio is. In other words, if you're contributing towards a retirement fund, you need to make sure that at least 70% of your last paycheck is what you can achieve through the funds that you've invested through your retirement fund in order to sustain the same standard of living. So when you retire, your fund needs to be able to buy you a monthly annuity, and that's the 70% we're talking about, at least to retain the same standard of living. And this is why, I mean, that number of 6% has been around for a long time from Stats SA, that only 6% of South Africans can retire comfortably, and majority of South Africans will retire into poverty because they've not saved adequately for retirement. Now, this issue of retirement replacement ratio is so critical, and that's why government is making these reforms to say, even if you've got an early access towards on your retirement fund, that we are talking about a different pot. It's not like you can just access the entire fund. And I doubt when that is passed, I doubt it to be a significant percentage of amount that people can access.
There you have it. John Manyika, head of financial education at Old Mutual, talking about the latest Old Mutual Savings and Investment Monitor. Some decent progress in certain areas, but still many are not very confident, especially at the low end. That's where we see there are many people extremely concerned about job and income security. And I think for good reason, and with where inflation came out today, it is likely to get harder before it gets any easier. So start by just saving part of your monthly income. Pay yourself first, set it up, do it automatically, and start building your financial independence and freedom. You're listening to Hot Business.
Hot 1027 Business with Michael Avery.